Hey there. Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. Today's message comes from the book of Mark. The book of Mark tells the story of the life and impact of Jesus of Nazareth, the most influential human in the history of the world. It's our hope that through this message, you'll be able to either find God or follow him more closely. For more information about our church, to join a summer collective, attend a service, or to give online, visit threecreekschurch.com.
Well, hey, good morning, Three Creeks. My name is Joel, and I'm the one they were referring to as the one who does not like Panera. So I am proud of that conviction. I also, as John and Amy were passing me back there, they both acknowledged that they would have only gotten one right of the five without your help. So good job helping them keep their positions as our hosts. And truly, if you want to come over to our house next Sunday after lunch or after church, come over for lunch. We'd love to tell you more about our church. My wife Morgan and I live right around the corner and would love to just have you over and tell you more about what makes Three Creeks Three Creeks, kind of share our DNA with you. One of the things that I love about our church, about any church for that matter, is when people come to church and don't just look to come and sing a song or hear a message, but actually come in with an attitude of like, I'm willing to respond today. I'm willing to change. I'm willing to do something different. I'm open to what God has to say to me. And then from time to time, I get to hear stories of the way that people respond. And I just want to take a minute before I get into Mark 13 to tell you about how somebody responded to Mark chapter 12 last week. I had the inside scoop. I'm going to save some names and not share all the details for their sake. But I just wanted to encourage you. I think it's been a long year. I think if I asked you, have you had a long year? I think you would say, yes, it's been difficult. I've been discouraged. It's been hard. I don't know if anyone is immune from what we have gone through. And so I was sharing this with Morgan just the other day, and she said, you need to tell people that because I think it will encourage them. And so this is my attempt to encourage you a little bit this morning and just say, God is really doing things in our church. So where's Trevor Huffman at? Is the man in the house? Big bearded man with tattoos? Where is he at? Back there? Trevor, come on up here, man. Come on up here. Take a long stroll down the aisle. I think people will keep clapping if you keep just... Yeah. Yeah. Come on down. Come on down. Guys, Trevor Huffman, long story really, is that he started coming to our church like 2 weeks before we took a trip to Burkina Faso years ago in 2018, right? And Trevor almost went on that trip at the last second, decided against it, but then has kind of been itching to go on a trip to be a part of our global impact team. And so a few months ago, Trevor's wife Madeline leads those teams, and Trevor, he made the commitment to go, but it's not cheap. It costs a lot of money. It's over 2,000 bucks, and it's not something that you just do flippantly. And so, but Trevor said, I feel called by the Lord to go, to be a part of this team. We're going to Guinea in October. And he said, I'm going, and I'm going to trust that God will provide the finances. So he's been setting money aside. He is selling plants, I believe, propagating them and selling. He ran out of propagated plants. But he's been kind of saving some money. Somebody else in our church last week heard about the fact, or heard the message about Mark chapter 12, and just wanting to be the conduit through which God uses money to bless other people with, right? Like this mentality that like our money isn't ours, our money is for us to use to further the work of God. And so somebody called me this week, they'd heard that Trevor was wanting to go on this trip, had some more money to raise. So one, I applaud the obedience of Trevor to say, I will go. And then this person said, how much does Trevor still need? I said, I'll find out. So I called Trevor, hey man, where you at? In the fundraising process, how much have you saved? What's the gap? He said it's about $900. So I told this other person, hey, the gap is $900. And that person said immediately the need is met. And so that person donated 900 bucks to my man Trevor here. Trevor's going to Guinea. So I just wanted to just publicly affirm that Trevor is living his life on mission for Jesus, taking risks. And then other people in our church who are not even going on the trip are coming alongside him, being obedient to what God is saying, making moves, not just coming here, saying hi, but making moves, making changes in their own personal life, big time changes to want to be obedient to what God is saying in Mark chapter 12. So I just wanted to encourage you with that. Stuff like that's happening. One more time with Trevor as he walks off the stage. Congratulations. Go to Africa. Promise me you will return. He might not. We'll see. So that's Mark chapter 12. And things like that are happening. And from time to time, I like to share them with you. This morning's another one of those messages where this could be just another message. This could be the best week of your year. And the ball is in your court because God has already put into Mark chapter 13 what he wants to say to me, what he wants to say to you. I've had the luxury of sitting on this for the last 4 or 5 days and just letting it just be on my mind. And so I feel like I have a 5-day head start on what God has been asking me to do. I'm going to share it with you. Ball's in your court. Could be a game changer week. Could be another week at church. I'm going to pray for us that it might be a crazy, crazy week where we could see God. Lord, I pray as I share this that you would not let us hear this and leave unchanged. I pray that you would burden us to respond and that through that we could see you, experience you, have more confidence and faith in you than we've had in a while. Lord, it would be risky to respond to this, but I pray that we would. And I pray that you would show us who you are in it. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so if you have your Bibles, you can open them or turn them on or whatever to Mark chapter 13. And then, Mike, could we get 136 on up there so in case somebody has a paper Bible, they are able to see it in front of them. Wherever you're at on your journey, so if you're newer to church, if this is something that you do every week, the beauty of this passage is it's going to hit you no matter where you're at. If you are just here going, man, I'm curious about God. I've heard about church. If you're there, or if you have been in church since you were 1 week old, put in the nursery, wherever you're at, this is going to speak to you. This is certainly the intent I think that Jesus had when he shared it. I want to preface it by also saying that many commentators, as I read Mark chapter 13, were remarking at how complicated Mark 13 is. One writer, commentator James Edward, writes, "This is one of the most perplexing chapters in the Bible to understand for readers and interpreters alike." So you go find someone who knows everything about the Gospel of Mark, and even they, to some extent, would be perplexed by what Jesus says in Mark chapter 13. My goal today is not to make simple things complicated, but to take complicated things and make them simple to you. I'll be honest, as I was studying it, at first I was tempted to skip it, see if I could figure out a way around it, but you know how we roll at Three Creeks. We just kind of keep making our way through, and so couldn't skip it. It'll be difficult to teach. It'll be difficult to teach, especially in 30 minutes, and potentially it'll be difficult to apply for you, but I'm trusting and I've been praying that we would be able to do that. Here's some interesting information for you. Read this week. But a burglary happens every 22 seconds in the United States of America. 88% of burglaries are happening in residential areas. Anybody living in a residential area? 3 out of 4 homes will be broken into in the next 20 years. So 75% of you will have your home broken into at some point. Am I making anybody nervous yet? 75% of us are going to have our homes broken into in the next 20 years. 75% of burglars, where do they go first in the house? Your bedroom. It's where you keep all your money stuff, right? Your jewelry or whatever's most valuable to you, it's probably in your bedroom. It's violating just to say it out loud. 6% more likely to occur during the day than at night. Interesting. Your odds go way up when you post pictures of yourself not home on the internet. July and August, most common months for burglaries to occur. It is August 1st. We are in the thick of it, my friends. 34% of burglars go through the front door. You, the people that don't lock their front door, that's where they're coming in. And then, of course, maybe the window or something like that. and Simply Safe and ADT are not paying me for this advertisement right now. You could go and spend a couple hundred dollars and then pay a monthly fee of $15 to $20 or something to set up a security system. You get the cameras, you get the little things on your door, little magnets, you hide them up. You know what I'm talking about, right? You hide them around your house, and you could do that. Or this one's free. This is free advice. You go to Amazon.com, and you get a little ADT sign for $25.99. You just post it right in your front yard, and you don't even have to worry about the monthly fee. What if I told you, I know I wanted to give you those statistics to say, hey, like 3 out of 4 of us, high chance, we're going to get our homes broken into. If I told you that soon, a thief will come and attempt to burglarize your home, how would you respond to that? What would you actually do? If I told you, I know for a fact that soon, a burglar will come, and he will try to burglarize your home. She will try to burglarize your home. What would you do? How would you respond? If you've already got all the systems set up, my thought is that you would still take extra precaution to make sure it works, make sure you'd run home real quick, make sure all the windows are latched. You might even change the locks on your door. Somebody might have a copy of the key to your house, right? You would take all the precautions to make sure that you are not burglarized. This is probably a response. If you do not have this system set up and you're the kind of person that leaves your car unlocked and your home unlocked, you would, I would think if you've got any amount of brain matter between your ears, you would go, oh, then I'm going to start locking my door. I'm going to make sure that I'm not going to post pictures of me on vacation at the beach knowing that my home is unattended. These are the things we would for sure prepare. Like if we knew that was going to happen, we would prepare. Okay. Now, Jesus, he's this person that comes on the scene. He's born as a person in Bethlehem. You know that story. And he's a carpenter's son. He grows up. And when he's about 30 years old, he starts to do miracles. And we start to read about all these miracles in Mark chapter 1, Mark chapter 2, Mark chapter 3. We've seen this picture of Jesus where he gathers his disciples and feeds 5,000 people and heals people. And there's thousands of people that begin to follow Jesus. But all the time, you'll notice if you read Mark, if you read the whole thing start to finish, he spends a lot of his time where he'll duck away for a minute and just talk to his disciples. He'll talk to his close 12 guys. And I'll have these important conversations with the disciples. If you have a Bible, maybe it's actually even on your app too, or maybe you have a paper Bible, and it's the words are in red. That means that these are the words of Jesus. And if you look at Mark chapter 13, the whole thing is red. The whole thing. It's all Jesus' words to his disciples when they kind of ducked away and he's having this private conversation with them. And what he says in the first few verses of Mark chapter 13 is that I've come. He's essentially saying that I'm going to die. I'm going to rise again. I'm going to go to heaven. And then, catch this, he goes, I'm going to come back. I'm going to return. I am not going to leave you here forever. I'm going to return. And this is one place of maybe 100 in the New Testament where Jesus talks about the fact that he will return. He's not going to leave us here. There's going to be an end to this story. There's going to be a point where Jesus comes back. And the disciples want to know, well, how do we know when that's going to happen? How can we get ready for that? You're saying it's going to happen, but what has to happen first, or what do we look for? And then Mark chapter 13, Jesus gives us a lot of detail about what's going to happen right before Jesus comes back. I'm going to read almost all of Mark chapter 13. For those of you that are ADD like me, you're going to probably like tune in, tune out 3 or 4 times during the course of these 37 verses. I'll put the verses up on the screen, and I might even say something in between the verses to keep your attention. We might even take a breather halfway through. I think it's 37 verses long. Mark chapter 13, I'm going to start in verse 3, and I'm going to read all the way to verse 37. This is what it says. It says, later, Jesus sat on the Mount of Olives across the valley from the temple. Peter, James, John, and Andrew came to him privately and asked him, "Tell us, when is this going to happen? What sign will you show us that all this stuff is going to be fulfilled?" So Jesus replied, these are all the things. "Don't let anyone mislead you, for many will come in my name claiming I'm the Messiah, and they're going to deceive a lot of people, and who hear of wars and threats of war, but don't panic. Yes, these things must take place, but the end won't follow immediately. Nation will go to war against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in many parts of the world, as well as famines. But this is only the first of the birth pains, with more to come. When these things begin to happen, watch out. You will be handed over to the local councils and beaten in the synagogues. You will stand trial before governors and kings because you're my followers. But this will be your opportunity to tell them about me. For the good news," look at this, "must first be preached to all the nations." That's not the only place in the Bible that says that. "But when you're arrested and stand trial, don't worry in advance about what to say. Just say what God tells you at the time. It's not you who will be speaking, but it'll be the Holy Spirit." Verse 12, this is some other stuff. "A brother will betray his brother to death. A father will betray his own child." This is not a pretty scene. "Children will rebel against their parents and cause them to be killed, and everyone will hate you because you're my followers. But the one who endures to the end will be saved." He gets into even more detailed specifics. Verse 14, "The day is coming when you will see the sacrilegious object that causes desecration standing where he should be." Reader, pay attention. "At that point, those in Judea, they must flee to the hills. If you're on the deck of a roof, you don't even go down to the house to pack. A person in the field, you don't even return to get a coat. How terrible will it be for pregnant women and for nursing mothers in those days? I pray that your flight will not be in winter." Jesus is praying that this won't happen in winter, knowing, re-emphasizing the fact that even Jesus doesn't know when he's going to come back. You're going to find out more about that in a second. "For there will be greater anguish in those days than at any time since God created the world. It will never be so great again. In fact, unless the Lord shortens that time of calamity, not a single person will survive. But for the sake of his chosen ones, he has shortened those days." This is intense. Verse 21, "If anyone tells you, look, here's the Messiah, or there he is, don't believe it. False messiahs, false prophets, they're going to rise up. They're going to perform signs and wonders just to deceive you. And if possible, even God's chosen ones. So watch out. I'm warning you ahead of time before this stuff happens. Watch out. At that time, after the anguish of those days," look at this, "the sun will be darkened. The moon will give no light. The stars will fall from the sky, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then, after all this, then, everyone will see the Son of Man," that's Jesus, "coming on the clouds with great power and glory, and he will send out his angels to gather his chosen ones from all over the world, from the farthest ends of earth and heaven." Now, learn a lesson from the fig tree. Jesus is all over the place here, but it'll make sense in a minute. Learn a lesson from the fig tree. When its branches bud and its leaves begin to sprout, you know that summer is near. In the same way, when you see all these things taking place, you can know that his return is very near, right at the door. I'm telling you the truth. This generation or this nation will not pass from the scene before all these things take place. Heaven and earth will disappear, but my words will never disappear. And this is what I was talking about earlier, verse 32. "Look, however, no one knows the day or the hour when these things will happen." Jesus says it will be like a thief in the night. Not even the angels in heaven or the Son himself. Only the Father knows. And since you don't know when that time will come, be on guard, stay alert, watch out. Last couple verses. If you've tuned out, tune back in. The coming of the Son of Man, it can be illustrated by a story of a man. He goes on a long trip. And when he leaves home, he gives each of his slaves instructions about the work they're supposed to do. And he says to the gatekeepers, keep watch for my return. You too, you must keep watch. For you don't know when the master of the household will return. In the evening, at midnight, before dawn or daybreak, you don't know when he's coming back. So, verse 36, don't let him find you sleeping when he arrives without warning. I say to you what I say to everybody, watch for him. Watch for him. He's coming back. Watch for him. Now, I don't know about you. Perhaps you are more in tune with the end times and thinking about these things than me. But when I read this, it was the first time in probably 3 months that I thought about the return of Christ. I think about, well, like when I think about people in my life who don't know who Jesus is, and I think about how I want them to know who Jesus is, I don't necessarily think of the return of Christ being kind of the deadline, if you will. I imagine them getting sick or getting into an accident, and that being what would cause me great pain. I imagine that's kind of like my deadline, if you will. I don't always think about the return of Christ. When I was a kid, I thought about the return of Christ a lot. You know, when you're just like driving down the road for hours on end and you don't even know where you're going to your grandparents' house. And I just remember as a kid, like looking out and being like, is he behind that cloud? As a kid, I thought about this all the time. And my dad would even ask me sometimes, Joel, what would you do? If you knew Jesus was coming back pretty soon, what would you do? And I had a plan. I knew exactly what I was going to do. I was going to go to Jacobs Field. Somebody know who Jacobs Field is? It's the home of the Cleveland Guardians, baby. They're formerly known as the Cleveland Indians. I love the Indians in the mid-90s. Somebody say amen for Albert Bell and Kenny Lofton. Come on. Those were the days. And I'm telling you, I had a plan. I told my dad, Dad, I would go to Jacobs Field. I know there's going to be 43,000 people there because they always sell out. And so I'm going to try to find the person with the microphone. I'm going to get on the microphone. I'm going to tell everybody in that whole stadium what Jesus did for them. Because if Jesus is coming back, I got nothing to lose. I'm going to go do that. He said, is that all you would do? I said, no, I got a bigger plan. I would figure out how to get a radio station to go everywhere in the whole world. I don't know. I would just try to tell everybody I had this plan. Everybody would set up their speaker and we'd daisy chain all over the world. Just so that I could tell it, this is 7-year-old dreamer Joel, okay? It's not realistic, but I'm telling you, my heart in it was like, if Jesus is coming back, and I think he probably is pretty soon, I better start telling people. When I went to second grade at Willard Elementary School, I had 21 other kids in my class. I told every single one of them about Jesus. I was in second grade. It's not, my percentage isn't that high anymore. I meet people all the time. I have close friends, people that I love so much, who I have been double dutching a little bit. Am I going to go in? I'm going to have a spiritual cup? And I hesitate. And I'm reading this, and this is long, and this is perplexing. There's a lot of information, and there's a temptation to get lost in it. And I don't know if your brain works like mine, but mine, when I read this, my thought is, okay, I'm going to print it out. I'm going to get a whiteboard. I'm going to get a highlighter, and then I'm going to start going through and taking notes, looking at the details. Okay, earthquakes and famines, and the sun's going to be darkened. Okay, I remember when that happened, right? We all bought those glasses. I remember when that happened, and father will turn against their son. Christians are going to be persecuted. There's going to be a people that claim to be the Messiah. And I start taking all these notes, and I'm like the guy in The Beautiful Mind, right? Like putting push pins into a board and strings all over the place. I like work for the CIA trying to figure out who the mastermind is. And I come up with this plan, and I think that is not how Jesus intended us to take this passage. I think that's the opposite of how Jesus intended us to take this passage. I don't think that a mature Christian looks at this and goes, oh, I really need to figure out when Jesus is coming back, because he literally says in there that even he doesn't know when he's coming back. I did a deep dive into Wikipedia/YouTube, trying to find all these people that have made these claims that they know when Jesus is coming back. And I'm always wondering, what do they do the day after? Right? Like people rent out billboards. Like, what happens the day after their prediction doesn't come true? And I found one guy, his name's Edgar Wisenhunt. He published a book in the early 1980s titled 88 Reasons the Rapture Will Be in 1988. And on January 1st, 1989, he wrote another book called 89 Reasons the Rapture Will Happen in 1989. And I read a bunch of other ones, and if you did a deep dive too, you would laugh. I mean, it really is amazing how many people have tried to predict when Jesus Christ will return, and Jesus explicitly says, you cannot. And so as I read this, and as I try to digest some of what I've experienced in my life and what I'm reading on paper, I believe that the purpose of Jesus' teachings in Mark chapter 13 is not to provide a blueprint for the future. It's to encourage us to prepare well in the present. It's not for us to drop some timeline or some map on a whiteboard. It's for us to look at our hearts and look at the people around us and go, are we preparing well for the future? I told you earlier that you know, if I said a thief is going to come and try to burglarize your home, you immediately thought about the ways that you would prepare for that. And I guess I'm just telling you what Jesus said, that there's going to be a moment when Jesus comes, and it may be soon. And I'm like you. I don't feel like I've done a whole lot of preparation recently for that. I haven't thought about it even that much. I'm ashamed. I'm embarrassed even to say that. I'm supposed to do that. It's my job to think about these things. I'm just saying I'm with you in that, like, this is not at the top of my mind all the time. But as I'm reading Mark 13, I'm going, wait a minute. This might happen soon. I'm not going to do this, but I thought about doing it, but I won't. But I think you'll understand what I'm saying as I do it here. If I were to ask the question to the whole room, I said, you don't have to, but raise your hand if you believe that Jesus is coming back. Raise your hand if you believe that Jesus is coming back. I think that if you're a Christian or a Christ follower, I think that over 90% of you, 95% of you would raise your hand and say, yes, I do believe that that is going to happen. And as people ask that question to different Christian audiences, all the hands go up. We believe that Jesus is coming back. It's kind of a doctrine of the Christian faith. What if I said, raise your hand if you want him to come back today at noon? Raise your hand if you want him to come back today at noon. Some of your hands would go up, but not very many. And think about why that is for a second. Think about why we would be hesitant to say, yeah, I'll take it at noon. For many of us, if you're a Christian, if you're a Christ follower, somebody just came to your mind. Somebody who you love, somebody in your family, a neighbor, somebody you work with. You just thought, man, I've got to have at least one more chance to tell them about who Jesus is. You just thought about some unfinished business. You thought about something that if you knew that Jesus would come back at noon, you would have started preparing months ago for that. So you're not ready for it to happen at noon. If you're not a Christ follower, or actually even if you are, but you don't totally understand what the gospel is, I think one of the reasons why we might be hesitant to go, yeah, I'll take it at noon, is because we have this thought of like, well, but I got to clean up my life first before that happens. I'm not sure if I want Jesus to see me like this. It's been a rough month. It's been a rough couple of years. I'm just getting back into things. We want a little bit more time to prove ourselves and make sure that we're in. And I guess in following up those two questions, what came to mind is what you wish you had time to do? And then I just ask the follow-up question, why wouldn't you do that this week? What would be stopping you from doing that this week? I was driving with Morgan. We were heading up to see my parents the last couple days. Morgan's my wife. And we were just driving, and I just said to her, I said, Morgan, if you knew Jesus was coming back next weekend, what would you do this week? Like, we believe that Jesus is going to come back. If you knew he was coming back in 7 days, what would you do this week? And she acknowledged that that's a really difficult question to answer. And it's kind of a gut check question to answer. It's not something we think about that much. And Morgan, my wife, because she loves Jesus and is just sensitive what God is telling her, she's already initiated some plans that this week we're doing some stuff that we've been talking about doing for years. We're doing some stuff tonight. I'm not going to let you in on it at the moment. It's our thing with the Lord. I'm just saying we've talked about doing this for years, and the plan is in motion, and that tonight we're getting with some people that we love very, very much and just wanting to make sure we lay out exactly what we believe that Jesus has done for us. I'll just ask you the same question I asked Morgan. If you knew that Jesus was coming back before I stand up here again, before next weekend, in 7 days, Jesus is coming back, what comes to mind as business that you need to take care of? What comes to mind as something that you would do between now and then? And then follow up question, why not? Why not this week? Why not just do it? What is holding you back? I guess you could give me a reason. Maybe it's a good one, but I don't think so. I can't really think of good reasons to not. And I want to close the message today by just reading the last couple verses one more time, and then just asking that question again. So let me read to you verse 34 one more time. It says, the coming of the Son of Man, it can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. And when he left home, he gave each of his slaves instructions about the work they were to do, and he told the gatekeeper to watch for his return. You too, you must keep watch, for you don't know when the master of the household will return, in the evening, at midnight, before dawn, or at daybreak. Don't, friends, Three Creeks family, don't let him find you sleeping when he arrives without warning. I say to you what I say to everyone, watch. I found this really interesting. I found this fascinating. I was kind of going through the list of the things that Jesus said would happen before he comes. Earthquakes, famines, those kinds of things. And the one verse that I kind of emphasized as I read it the whole first time was that everybody needs to be able to hear the good news. Like it's not the only part in the Bible where it says that the news, the gospel must be preached to everybody, and then the end will come. That's what Jesus says a couple times. Then the end will come. This is interesting to me, just telling you. Wycliffe Bible translators, definitely the most effective, most well-known Bible translators in the world, a couple years ago predicted that it would be 2150. That would be the year, 130 years from now, when the Bible would be translated into every language in the world. That's how long it was going to take. There's like 6,000 or 7,000 languages. It takes a long time to translate the Bible into these languages. Well, apparently technology and the way that things work now has moved up their timeline about 125 years. And they're saying that in the next couple years that every single language on the face of the earth will have a Bible in their language, all 6,000 or 7,000 of those languages. I'm not trying to be some future predictor. I'm not trying to be some code decoder. I'm not trying to be somebody who's poo-pooing on social media or technology, but I feel like we all know that we're kind of living in a really changing world right now, where everything changed like 12 years ago when we all got phones like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like the jury's still out on what this is going to do to us as a people, as a society. In 50 years, they're going to look back on this time and go, man, can you believe how much the world changed? You guys, we're living in a decade, if you will. We're living in a decade where news is just flying all over the place, so fast, so crazy. And as bad as it is at times, and as frustrating as it can be at times, it also is now going to be the avenue through which every single person on the face of the earth hears the gospel of Jesus Christ. Like, we're living, and we're near that time. I'm not going to go through and see, are we checking all the boxes and make some prediction. I'm just saying that one, the one that everybody needs to hear about Jesus, and then the end will come, that's coming, and that's soon. And so in the same way that I'm like, hey, someone's going to burglarize your home, and you go, oh, I better get prepared. I'm just communicating the same thing. Guys, I think soon, Jesus is coming back. Maybe in our lifetime, maybe not. But if so, if he was coming back in 7 days, what would you do? So that's my closing question. Beth, you can throw that question up there on the slide. If you knew Jesus would come back in 7 days, what's one thing that you would do this week? Now, this is the part of the service where the ball gets thrown into your hands. The ball is in your court. This can be any other Sunday, or this can be a 2 or 3 minute time where you and God spend, and he brings something to mind, and then you choose this week whether or not you want to do it or not. So let me give you 2 or 3 minutes to chew on that. In a minute, we're going to take communion together and sing one more song.
Thanks for listening. For more information about our church, our weekly services, joining a group or a team, or to give online, visit 3creekschurch.com.